Off the Ball, GAA.
It's still fairly raw to lose an All-Ireland final, but to not hit the levels that we had had all year and the biggest day of the year was probably the hardest thing to take.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The news wrap on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care, when things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
It's 35 and a half minutes. It's 35 and a half minutes. Siobhan Leahy, I hope this does you good. Your Aunt Mary Colgan is saluting me here from behind. I'm trembling. Jamesy has the point on the scoreboard. I'm hardly able to write it down.
It's all over.
It's all over. Yes, 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 yes. I'm standing up. I'm trembling. Oh, Clare are the All-Ireland champions. I never thought I'd get to say it. But thanks be to God, the 70 minutes that we have dreamt about and dreamt about. John Minogue. Oh, bye, oh, bye, oh, bye.
Yes, indeed. The sounds of Matthew McMahon on Clare FM this week, 30 years ago, the 3rd of September, 1995, when Clare beat Offaly to win their first All-Ireland title in 81 years. Tonight on the show, we're celebrating this moment because we have had the pleasure to sit down with Sherlock Nan for an extended interview in Ennis a little earlier on today. So it's coming your way on the radio tonight between 7:30 and 9:00. From 9:00 then, the football show comes your way as scheduled. Mick is going to be chatting to Henry Winter, and we're also going to be talking Republic of Ireland with Nathan Murphy as we head into the international break. Nathan, by the way, very busy this week. He's also been working hard down at the K Club, so he's secured an exclusive chat with Rory McIlroy, and he's also been speaking on the course to Brooks Koepka. They're now available, those interviews, on the Golf Weekly feed for free, and we're also going to be bringing to you them on the radio tomorrow evening, because we're going to be coming to you live from the K Club. So we're all over the country this week. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to contact us on WhatsApp. Tonight I'm speaking to you from the Radisson here in Athlone, on my way back to Dublin from Ennis, and back in studio in Dublin. I'm happy to say that we have Stephen Doyle bringing you the news round very shortly. Steve, how are you doing?
I'm great, Owen. Thanks very much.
And Michael McCarthy, of course, is in studio.
Hi,
Mick.
He won't rob your grave as quick, Owen. Look at him. He's in the hot seat and he's absolutely delighted.
How could he not be hearing those sounds of 1995? It's I presume this is right up there with top five, at least top 10 moments in your entire life.
In my entire life, right? We're taking the sporting life out of it. Yeah, easily, I would say. Best summer of my life, 95. Hot weather. Oh my God. Steve, I'll remember because the Dubs won the All Ireland. But yeah, like I was 10 years old though, you know, and like you're going to talk a lot of to Gerlach Nan later on about heartache and everything that went with it, but had been at previous Munster finals and so on, and had been at the league final, which comes up a lot, the 95 league final against Kilkenny, in the story of Clare's breakthrough. And it was a sort of a sense of like, you know, it's never going to happen. Why do we come from this place where, you know, nothing ever goes well? I remember, like, even there was a great under 21 team in 92 that happened to come up against the great Waterford under 21 team and lost the brilliant Munster final. You know, it was that kind of thing. It was like nothing would ever work. And then, as long as I live, I'll never, like, I remember almost every detail of, you know, what I was doing, not necessarily the match in the 95 All Ireland, you know, and it's just never left me, like, you know.
We should say that Gerlach Nan agreed to do this interview after you contacted him, Mick. I mean, was there a Clare nature to the connection? I mean, I've never successfully booked Gerlach Nan for the show. He's a man who doesn't like to comment too much on contemporary hurling matters. I think he's deliberately taken himself away from the spotlight, so to speak, in terms of being put in front of a microphone. So why did he say yes to you to talk about this?
I don't know. I suppose you'd have to ask Ger that. But no, I did a piece with Ger a few years ago, And obviously the Clare connections kind of over the course of the day kind of came up, and he talked to me and he remembered my grandfather hurling. There was that kind of, you know, that small county element. My grandfather would obviously have been a good bit older than Ger, but he remembered, you know, the tales of him and so on. So, yeah, there was like a bit of a connection there, but like, you know, no more so than many people would have. I think Ger has deliberately taken himself out in that he does everything full, you know, and he did his playing career to the very end, you know, at the absolute maximum. Then he used management career again until it just takes it out of it. And I think it was the same with his punditry. He just wanted to do it until, you know, it was time to step off. And then when he stepped off, he stepped off, you know. So, but I think I just more or less told him that we were hoping to, that he, I know he doesn't do much anymore, but we wanted to celebrate this anniversary and this moment in time, which is, you know, we'll hear some commentaries and different things like, this was, and if you're listening in Armagh or you're listening in Tyrone or, you know, Offaly, Galway, you know, in from a hurling point of view, you know, this happens only every few years and it only happens to a county once. And there was nothing like 1995 from Clare's point of view. And all the success since and all has been amazing, and the heartache, you wanted more when you've had it before and all of that, so on. But there'll only ever be one breakthrough. And I think Ger recognised that, and because we wanted to celebrate that, I think he was more than happy to kind of come out of his retirement for one day only.
Just on the broadcasting thing, because he obviously was one of the great pundits, and you'd put him up there with the likes of, say, you know, Joe Brolly, Pat Spillane, John Giles, Dunphy, all these great pundits that we've seen over the years.
The voice of, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just for the honesty and, you know, I suppose, cut through the bullshit, you know, pardon my French. But, like, why did he step away? And do you think, because he's still a young enough man, like, he'd surely have still a lot to give to broadcasting, punditry, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I'm sure he would, but he's probably done it long enough and there's a new generation coming through. And don't forget, there was a lot of changes in RTE as well. And, you know, like, I mean, you're looking with new panels and new rotations and so on. And maybe it was time for someone else to do it. You know, like, you have to remember that as well, as that, without getting too into it, like, you know, there was a leeway, I think, for certain pundits that suited certain pundits. Mm. And the way they do things these days might not work for that more kind of old school, say it like it is, get yourself in trouble, have the whole country hating you 1 week and then kind of loving you the next week. And, you know, I think those days are probably gone from at least TV punditry anyway.
It's amazing how much texture there is around this Clare All-Ireland win in 1995. Actually, a lot more texture than I had realised. I'm sure Clare people need no introduction to a couple of pieces of audio that we're about to play, but I met Tommy Rooney, our Gaelic Games correspondent, down in Ennis earlier on. We had a chat that you'll hear before we play Ger in about 20 minutes' time. And he brought up YouTube, and he brought up this video called Clare, What a Year, 95. I wasn't 100% sure who made it, but in the credits at the end, it has Marty Morrissey down as program editor, so I presume it's some sort of RTE production. I had never seen this in my life, but immediately after skimming through it today, you can put it adjacent to A Year Till Sunday in terms of great 1990s insightful sports documentaries. Like, they followed the Clare players in their 7 a.m. training sessions, do pitch side interviews with them. They go inside the homes of people who are involved with the team, and there is great access. But one of the amazing things, this is the first clip we play for you, is that they actually do dramatizations of certain moments in Clare's year. And Mick, you mentioned the league final in 1995, where they get absolutely hammered by Kilkenny. Well, I think it's 9 points in the end.
Oh, it's a hammering, yeah.
It's a 9-point hammering. And hope you know, the ambition of winning an All-Ireland seems like a distant thing after that league final. And in this Clare What a Year 95 video, there's a dramatization of what a pub in Feakle, namely Bohan's Pub in Feakle, might actually look like. Have a listen to the pint men.
Did you see what Lucknall said in the paper today?
Yes, indeed I did. Isn't it a brave man that say we'd win a Munster championship after that display against Kilkenny yesterday?
Well, there's another way of looking at it too. Maybe it was trying to give the lads a lift, he was.
Christ, they need some lifting. Did you see the match at all? Did you see the two goals they let in before the half-time?
Did I see it? Wasn't I at it?
Well, listen here to me, lads. Cork will bait about the gate in the Munster Championship, and there's nothing surer.
Well, look, any race, too many briars.
I don't think they're as bad as you're making them out to be.
Right, you forget in 93. Didn't Tipperary walk straight through them? And in 94, didn't they bait them out again?
What they need is something like Bemji.
Bemji?
Yes, chuck this all in the mind, you know.
Isn't that what I'm saying? That's where Luck Nairn comes in. Sure, isn't he better than any Bemji?
Time will tell.
There you go. This is Clare, what a year, 95. I mean, I'd love to know what happened to the actors after that, because they were only going one place only, which is Hollywood. That was absolutely sensational.
Sounds
stuff
like a Martin McDonagh
that
play.
Yeah.
Wait, you're familiar with this, Steve? Did I see you nodding there?
No, sorry.
The
it was just you mentioned the pub. I was in Feakel back in, probably early 90s, maybe, on a holiday down there. Some lovely thatched cottages. I can't remember, the woman's name. God, it's gone from my head now. But I remember our folks bringing us down there for a couple of weeks. We used to meet aunts and uncles from the UK, and they'd come over and have a holiday in Ireland with us. And we went to Feakel one year, and it was absolutely beautiful part of the country. Even though it was maybe a bit obscure, as you were saying.
Yeah, I did that. It's Sherlock Nairn's place, obviously. And I did that that aforementioned interview in Bowen's pub. It's the family of Father Harry Bowen, kind of famous Clare hurling man and the manager in the 1970s of the two league winning teams. So a lot of history in that pub as well. But that's a fantastic piece. I've never seen this documentary, which is kind of bizarre to me, and I feel like I'll be going home to watch it tonight.
Yeah, it's absolutely worthwhile. I'd highly recommend it to everybody. I just want to play one more clip from it, because Tony Considine, who is one of the two people that you'll hear Sherlock Nairn referred to quite a lot in this interview, in terms of his backroom staff, and there's this brilliant moment where he's having a shave in this documentary, but it's slightly dramatised as well, because clearly he's told to sing and he's told to have a conversation with his son when he goes downstairs to have breakfast. So here's some of Tony Considine.
Oh, my lovely Rose is Clare, a sweet girl I know, for the queen of all the roses, like the pretty flowers that grow. You are the sunshine of my life, so beautiful and fair. And I will always love you, I love the roses fair.
Oh, that's that much done.
Yeah, we'll go to Seafield. I'll give Owen a ring and the lads might come with us.
Yeah. Up at last. Have your gear ready, have you?
Yeah, I've everything ready now.
Right, okay.
Dad, why are you going training so early this morning?
We're in the Munster final and we're going to win it.
That's very, very simple sort of conclusion.
Anybody tuning in late to Off the Ball must be wondering what the hell is going on. They must have got the credit for the drama.
Listen, I'm here for it. I'm here for the half drama, half documentary nature to that. So check that out. It's Clare, What a Year, 95. And we'll be bringing you the full Sherlock Nairn interview between 7:30 and 9:00. It is basically a Clare 95 special. When it comes to other memories, Mick, any last bits that people should know in terms of what that meant to Clare people? I mean, it's easy to reach for the other comparable moments in recent GAA history, like Donegal maybe in 1992.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, you can talk about even Limerick to an extent in 2018, really felt deeply emotional. 1995, the madness of it all as a 10-year-old, what else do you remember?
Yeah, it's a good point. It's hard to put comparisons on things when, you know, you feel one of them probably more than you ever feel the other. But it's the one thing that I think you'll know from the conversations tonight and so on is you can't separate the 63 years for a Munster title and the 81 years for an All-Ireland. They were kind of one in the same. The Munster Championship was the thing to get over. And for me, I was at the Munster final alone, and like the relief and the excitement and the I can't believe this has happened. It was almost like there was no All-Ireland semi-final. It was nearly forgotten about, you know, and then it was like, and again, once you kind of got into that, it was almost after they beat Galway that you started thinking about what an All-Ireland would be or what that would mean. So it's a remarkable thing looking back, you know, because I don't think any county at any level would kind of just settle for the provincial breakthrough these days. And obviously there's backdoors and everything like that that didn't exist. They played four matches, and when I say things were wild and things were, it was like a singular focus And that's kind of, I do wonder if you're listening in Donegal and you remember 1992, or you're listening in, you know, Armagh, you remember 2002, for example, is this familiar? But it was like as if there was nothing else happening in the county except for this build up to these matches. You know, like tickets were, I remember it was not even a question that a 10-year-old would, like, you know, get a ticket on the terrace or whatever. Like, this was gone. I watched it in Killaloe. I spent the whole summer in Clare around it. You know, missed the Dublin part of it, funnily enough, you know. So I think that's it, Owen. It's like the colour and the magic and the flags and all of that stuff that is kind of, it's so commonplace in a way now, but like had never experienced it before. And we never thought that we would, for all the hope, you never really believed that you would experience it. And to be kind of like the darling of the country in some ways and the centre point and people talking about you and people caring about your team in the way you all have all your life. It's a kind of a remarkable thing. It's an interesting thing when you don't kind of, I don't mean this in a flippant way or anything, on, but like everybody's always talking about Kerry. You know, Kerry are as important nationally as they are locally. So when your team becomes that focal point for the first time, it's a strange thing to take in, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a really, really good point, putting them on the map. And I think Gerlach Nam would argue that they haven't really left the map in the last 30 years. And there's a whole legacy of what happened as a result of 95. And that is namely 97, 2013 and 2024. So plenty still to come on this between now and 9 o'clock. We're going to head towards the news round, which is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. And Steve-O, you are starting with football this evening. So you've got some disappointing injury news being revealed by the Republic of Ireland head coach.
Yeah, absolutely, Owen. How long have we been looking for an informed centre forward? Hamer Holgrimsson told media today that Troy Parrott is likely to miss next month's World Cup qualifiers. The Dubliner is already out of this month's international window with a knee ligament injury. It's a huge blow as the Azzy Alkmaar striker started his season scoring 10 goals in 7 matches in all competitions. He was already ruled out of the first two campaign fixtures with Hungary, the visitors to the Aviva Stadium on Saturday before an away trip to Armenia next Tuesday. Now it looks like he could miss the October games against Portugal and Armenia. Celtic defender Liam Scales rolled his ankle in the Premiership draw with Rangers at the weekend, but he's expected to be fine for the games this week. Meanwhile, Hamer Holgrimsson chose not to comment directly in relation to the legal dispute between the FAI and Eileen Gleeson. The former senior women's boss has taken a case against the association in which she alleges that her right to equal pay was breached. The FAI has said it will prepare a strong legal defence in response to those allegations. According to a Sunday Independent report, Holgrimsson's salary is over 6 times that of what Gleeson was earning last year. The Icelander believes that equal pay in the association is for someone else to decide.
From my point of view in this one, I was offered a job, and it was my decision if I took it or refused it. A lot of coaches will do the same things as I am doing, having a lot more money for that. There's also a lot of coaches as well doing the same thing as I am doing, getting less salaries than me. I can't accept a job offer or refuse it. It's my right, and that has nothing to do with gender, in my opinion. Equal pay is someone else to decide.
Yeah, a slightly tricky situation there for Hamer Holgrimsson. Obviously, wouldn't really expect him to answer that in many different ways. I'm not sure what your take is, lads, but has the air of optimism been taken out just a little bit by the Troy Parrott injury news? I think that was one of the real factors going into this international break that gave people hope. I know there's a bit of depth in the front three positions.
Yeah, like I feel, listen, we're playing our first match against a Hungary side which has some really, really top class players. A couple of them, as we know, are banging form, Milos Kerkez and Dominik Szoboszlai. So, you know, on paper, this Hungary team should be maybe getting a point, maybe even beating Ireland this Saturday. However, we do have, as you mentioned, in-form forwards across the line who are playing really well. We've got a bit of stability there in defence. We've got a goalkeeper who's in form, playing regular club football. The main issue is in midfield, as we all know. I'd still be going in feeling optimistic. Like, it's not ideal, obviously, losing Troy Parrott. The one time in his career where the international window and brilliant form of his aligns together and we end up missing him. But we do have Evan Ferguson, and he's playing really, really well for Roma. So I wouldn't be, I'd be really disappointed, but not too disheartened. I still think we can get 4 points out of this window.
Yeah, so still riding high on a bit of optimism there. And there is, of course, one uncapped player in the squad for the start of the campaign. You do wonder, could we see him feature, Stevo?
Indeed, Owen. Boston Lowell came to the youth ranks at St. Kevin's and Bohemians. He went on to play for Watford, Celtic, Fleetwood Town alone from the hoops, and now Stoke City in the Championship. And he's gone really well with them. He's played 390 minutes and 74 minutes in their four matches, and they are third in the table, so going very well. Lowell's form good enough to get another call-up and hopefully a cap this time. The 22-year-old was speaking today and said he can play anywhere in defence, midfield, and he's not fussy once he gets a green shirt.
As a centre half, I think someone that likes to play a lot. But I like to win all my duels, whereas early on the ground, I like to cover in behind. As a centre mid, I think I'm physical and can get around. Very, very good carrying the ball. Got some goals in me as well, so yeah.
Now then, we'll change tack to the transfer market, which slammed shut last night. And you've brought us news here of a goalkeeper switch on deadline day.
Yeah, these were two deals that were just wrapped up and confirmed this morning, this afternoon. On Gianluigi Donnarumma has pledged to give absolutely everything to help Manchester City achieve more success. The Italian goalkeeper has signed a 5-year deal after moving for a reported fee of €35 million from European champions Paris Saint-Germain. And he replaces the Brazilian Ederson, whose €14 million move to Turkish side Fenerbahce was also confirmed today.
Plenty else happening outside of football as well. So you've got the US Open and the first quarterfinal. News from that?
Yeah, it's home favourite Jessica Pegula reaching her second consecutive semi-final at Flushing Meadows. She defeated Czech two-time Grand Slam winner Barbara Krejcikova in straight sets in their last eight match today, 6-3, 6-3. Pegula will now play the winner of the Arena Sabalenka and Marketa Vondrousova match, which takes place at midnight. After that match on Arthur Ashe, the Pegula Krejcikova match, it's Carlos Alcaraz against Jiří Lehečka, the 20th seed from the Czech Republic. And Alcaraz has taken the first set 6-4, and he's already a break up in the second, serving to make it 2-0, or 2-love, I should say, in the second set.
We do then have more good news for Ireland's motorsport wunderkind.
Oh, indeed. This is the story that keeps giving this year, isn't it? Alex Dunn will drive McLaren's F1 car for a second time this weekend. The Offaly man will be in the driving seat for first practice at the Italian Grand Prix in Monza. Dunn will drive championship leader Oscar Piastri's MCL 39 car on Friday. The 19-year-old impressed in his first F1 practice outing with a fourth place finish at the Austrian Grand Prix in June. He'll also be racing, of course, in the F2 event this weekend in Italy, in which he still is a major title contender.
Nice to give some good news to Offaly when we're spending 2 hours talking about an All-Ireland final they lost.
Yeah.
30 years ago.
we're talking about hurling droughts quite a lot with Gerlach Nann, speaking of which the backroom team that are going to hope end Cork hurling's drought has been confirmed this afternoon.
Yeah, of course, that county board meeting is taking place this evening. A former All-Ireland winner, Ronan Curran, is said to be part of Ben O'Connor's management team with the Cork senior hurlers. O'Connor and his backroom team have been put forward for ratification this evening after he was named the favourite successor for Pat Ryan. Terence McCarthy, William Began, will join Curran as selectors, with Niall O'Halloran, the team's new hurling coach.
Mick, is this striking fear into the Clare public, the fact that Cork have got a fairly adept management ticket seemingly put together?
Not everything is about Clare, on. You know, we'll have already given 2 hours of them. But look, I mean, Cork, I think, had a pretty good management team, you know, so it's not like they're there. You know, they're there or thereabouts. It's just how it all clicks. And the thing I think Cork public always have to be aware of is that Tipperary are up there with them. Limerick are up there with them. Clare could be, who knows? You know, like there's challengers. You don't just saunter to an All-Ireland.
Dublin.
as they should. Yeah, why not? We'll have Niall O'Callaghan on Thursday show in studio with us, so we'll find out more about how Dublin are getting on. But you know, I think everything is in place for Cork. It seems like an incredibly strong backroom team, but I don't think it's like, well, who knows? It could be transformative. Everyone, I think, very much rates Ben O'Connor, but again, it's like they're not picking up from, you know, what was wrong wasn't Pat Ryan and his team. It's you know, it's just something went. There's a lot of history and a lot of water under the bridge now at this stage with Cork. Mm-hmm. Something needs to change.
Steve-O, we'll squeeze one last story in.
Yeah, indeed. This is an interesting one. The Federation of Irish Sport calling on government to look into an additional 1% betting levy for sport. The organisation represents the national governing bodies of sport and local sports partnerships in Ireland. In its pre-budget submission, it has asked for a commitment to research and publish a report into the additional levy. The Federation estimates 40 to 50 million euro could be raised, which would be used specifically for participation and community sport.
Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for that. Mick, thank you. You'll be back after 9 o'clock for the football show with Henry Winter and Nathan, of course, setting the scene on the Republic of Ireland this week. So after this break, we're going to go to Ennis, set the scene with our Gaelic Games correspondent, Tommy Rooney, and then we'll be bringing you the full 72-minute chat with Sherlock Nan, reflecting on this week 30 years ago, one of the greatest days for Clare GAA, for Clare Hurling, for Clare people as a whole.